Hey, everybody, this is A Mexican Crossing Lines with Cindy Gomez-Shemp.
And Duke Gomez-Shemp.
You're listening to 88.1 FM KPPPLP Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. And tonight, we are doing a special show, Missing in Fargo, the case of Savannah LaFontaine Graywind. I have a special in-studio guest with me tonight, Lissa Yellowbird Chase. Say hi, Lissa.
Hello.
And we're going to be talking tonight about not just what happened in the case of Savannah LaFontaine Graywind. We're also going to be talking about how this case was handled and what you can do to find a loved one if one of your friends or family members goes missing. We're going to have a lot of information for you tonight, so please share this show with everyone. And if you have tips or information that you want to share with us, we always appreciate your help in the work that we do. How can folks get a hold of us, Duke?
Well, there's many ways. One is right on your screen, there's a message line, 701-566-0917. Again, it's a message line. You call it and leave a message, and we'll get back to you. Another way is that people really... If that's not your bag, you can send us an email at Cindy at kppfm.com or me, Duke at kppfm.com. You can also follow us on Facebook at 88.1 FM Fargo-Moorhead, the People's Press Project at Mexi-Can. You can also follow Cindy on her public page by searching at Cindy Gomez-Shemp. And don't forget to go to our website at kppfm.com. And you can find all of our podcasts and you can find all of our shows in video format and audio format.
And since we have Lissa here, hopefully she will be able to answer some of your questions if you have questions for her. So getting started tonight, I wanted to first share with you the post that originated from Norberta LaFontaine, which was shared on Facebook by Lissa and many others, of the disappearance of Savannah. And this was dated Monday, August 21st at 10:59 a.m. Can you share with us, Lissa, how did you find out about all of this? How did you get involved?
Let's see. I saw the Facebook post, and later one of the family members got a hold of me through Facebook.
And they asked you to come and help?
Yes.
And did you go out and start investigating?
I went up to Norberta's residence and talked to the family. And while I was there, the Fargo PD had showed up for the second time. We had chatted through Facebook and learned through one of the neighbors that they thought they heard a struggle upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And so the police were called to come up and, like, take a statement regarding that.
Okay. And what did the discussion about what the people heard, what was that like? Did they describe what they heard to you?
They just said that the boyfriend had commented that they heard some loud noises coming from the bathroom, and he made a comment to his girlfriend about whose body are they cutting up there?
Because it was so loud.
Yeah.
Did you ask him to describe the sound, or did you ask him any questions about what kind of a sound he heard?
Yeah, I did. He just basically said it was a loud banging and couldn't really get into any more details than that. So I started just kind of pulling more information by saying, well, was it like a nail being banged into the wall? Or was it shampoo bottles falling? Because we all
in
know what
tub.
That.
Yeah.
He said he knows what that sounds like.
Right.
That definitely wasn't it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, well, like, how about a body slam? And he was like, kind of like that. But there was more. And I said, like, maybe arms and legs flailing. And he said, yeah.
So did you talk to any of the neighbors at that time?
I talked to the family, and I don't know if they were neighbors from across the hall, but some other people that were in the building, and then the couple that lives directly underneath William.
Did they see any other activity that day that they reported to you or information? I thought you said something about William.
Late Saturday night or early Sunday morning, it was reported that William was spotted out in the back of the apartment building on the other side of the fence. I don't know if there's a fence there or not, but that he was on the other side and he was searching through some taller grasses and bushes with a flashlight and came in with a small box.
Okay.
And they thought that was kind of odd.
And what time was that?
All I got was late Saturday or early Sunday.
So like wee hours of the night. Okay. So at some point you posted about somebody named Don Kirby. And this is the post that you made. This was posted August 22nd at 7:01 p.m. You said, Don Kirby is the female who lured Savannah into her upstairs apartment to model a dress for her. Savannah has not been seen since. Don is a registered sex offender who has failed to update her current address and lives within 250 feet of a school. Proper notice to surrounding tenants and the school have not been received. This is a violation, and who is watching this woman? Now an innocent mom-to-be is missing. And it shows a charge that Don Kirby has as she's a registered sex offender. And here is a report from True Crime, which shares the history of her offense. And that has to do with having had sex with a 16-year-old boy. And she was not sure if the baby belonged to the 16-year-old boy or the uncle of the 16-year-old boy. Is that correct, pretty much?
That's what it says.
Yep. So, after this, you received a visit from the Fargo PD.
I did.
Did you know that they were in charge of Facebook, too?
Well, I did refer to them as the Facebook police on a couple occasions, but I didn't realize how real that would become.
And what time did they show up at your place?
About 11:30 at night.
Wow. So very, very late. And now, did you receive calls from them that same day?
I did.
So here, if you don't mind, I would like to play some messages. Here's, it's 5B. And that would be the police department calling and leaving you some messages. Here it is.
So here's yesterday.
Hi, Lisa. It's Officer Sarge with the Fargo Police Department. I had saw your post on Facebook regarding this missing juvenile, and I'm curious, I have some questions for you, if you have any information to give to me. If you can call me back at dispatch number 701-235-4493, and I'll send you out to my number. I'm working until 7 a.m. tomorrow morning, and I'll be on for the next 2 days, same time. Thank you.
So that's for a missing juvenile. I don't know what that's about.
Missing juvenile, they said.
Lisa, this is Officer Siders with the Fargo Police Department. If you could give me a call back, I'd appreciate it. Number to reach me at is 701-235-4493. 701-235-4493. Thanks.
So those were the two calls. And then there was a female officer that called you. Was that after?
That was the next day.
That was the next day. So that night, you didn't get those calls. I believe you told me you were working.
I was sleeping.
Oh, you were sleeping. So you did not get those calls. And then they came and they woke you up.
Yeah, they came and pounded on the door until they woke Obadiah up. And he came and woke me up and said, there's cops at the door.
Okay. So I'm going to now play for you what that was about. The cops actually came to tell you to remove your Facebook post, just to give people an idea of what's going on here, because you missed the very first few seconds of the interaction with the police officer And then you went to get your recorder and you recorded the rest from that moment on. So to set this up, they were coming to Lissa's house to tell her to remove the Facebook post, and they also threatened to charge her with criminal defamation. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, so here is what was said.
Okay. I'm going to record it. Anything. Okay.
Okay. She is not leveled to where the public has to be notified of where she's living or the schools have to be notified. She's a low risk as a offender, okay?
I saw that.
Yeah. So I saw on your post that you're saying that the public has been notified, she lives near a school and stuff like that.
She's staying near a school.
Yep. But she's able to do that. There's no reason why she can't do that.
Okay.
If you don't remove the post, she is leaning towards filing a report for criminal defamation. Because she's concerned that if people find out her job, she's going to lose her job. She's concerned.
That's public information.
The sex offender part is yes, but the post concerning putting out where she lives and accusing her of all these accusations is not.
Well, if she doesn't live there, it shouldn't be a concern then, right?
She does live there.
Well, she does live there.
And there's nothing wrong with that. She has every right to live there.
Okay.
Okay. So with the post and her accusations, because you're accusing her of luring this female into our apartment and making her model dresses for her. If I read the post correctly?
Yeah.
Yeah? Where did all that come from?
You should probably go talk to your supervisor because it's all in the news.
Okay, I haven't heard anything like that. Okay, so if the post is not removed and she wants to pursue charges, it's a misdemeanor for criminal defamation, for accusing somebody of a crime that they didn't commit and causing public
hatred. That they didn't commit?
Yeah, there's no proof that she did anything.
No proof that she did anything regarding what?
Luring Miss Savannah into her apartment and making her model dresses for her, like you said in your post.
Well, I have proof of that.
Where's it?
Yeah. Well, tell you what,
I'm
going to bed. I was in bed when you got here.
Okay.
So I'm going back to bed, and we'll deal with it tomorrow. Okay? And if she really feels she has something, that's fine. She could prosecute. I've got my backup, too, that I could bring to court as well.
Yeah, okay? But I'm just saying, if you do have the proof, we would love to see it.
Okay, well, then you can go back tomorrow during regular hours, because you just got me out of bed.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm sorry for that. This is all
right. Okay, so then we'll continue tomorrow because I'll be at work till 5.
Okay.
Okay.
What time do you want a detective to come by?
After 5.
Okay.
Now
sounds good.
Okay. All right. Cool.
Thanks. You.
Okay. So did it?
Got the Facebook police here.
So did they come back?
No, they didn't. They stood out in the hall for a few seconds, and they left.
You didn't just hear from one person that the woman, Dawn Kirby, is somebody they recognize living in that building.
Right.
You said that all of the neighbors told you that.
Multiples.
Multiple people living there told you that. So I wanted to back up here for a minute before we go any further into the documentation and ask you, what did the family tell you initially about the way that the police treated their missing person report?
Well, basically, they felt that their concerns were not being taken seriously. In a nutshell, they were basically gaslighted into thinking that they were doing something wrong by making these reports, because I guess the officer repeatedly told them, she's fine, she's fine, she's fine, and kind of made them feel like they were doing something wrong by pursuing this report and continuing to call and egg on an investigation.
Is their behavior, in your experience, wrong? Was there something wrong about their behavior?
I don't think it was wrong. I think it was probably something that the police aren't used to. I think from my evaluation of how they responded to their daughter's missing status was like what I'd like to see everybody do. They reported it within, you know, within a couple hours, you know. And, I mean, you have to think, this lady came to their door.
Right.
They all saw her.
Right.
You know, she made this request in front of everybody. I mean, how often when you make visual contact with someone who comes to your door that you're acquainted with, do you suspect that something like this is going to happen? And so when they had gone upstairs a few times and kept asking, you know, where's Savannah, where's Savannah, eventually the police told them that they are not allowed to go upstairs anymore.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
They're not supposed to look for their own daughter?
Nope.
Oh, my God.
They're to leave that lady alone.
The lady that lived in the... okay.
The lady that summoned Savannah up to model the dresses.
Okay. So that they're feeling like there's not really, they're kind of tied. Their hands are tied, literally, from being able to do something. That's got to feel desperate when you are trying to look for someone that you love. And the people that have the job of doing that are telling you, don't worry about it. She's probably fine. She's fine. And stop talking to the people that last saw her.
Yes.
So when you're talking about the possible suspects here, the people that were identifying who took their, you know, who took their daughter upstairs from the family, as well as the people living in the building, said the picture of Dawn Kirby, yes, that's the woman that lives here.
Yes.
And they didn't just say it to you. They said it to the news people, too.
Eventually, they did, yes.
On WDAY, wasn't it?
I believe so.
So there was an interview, and I'm not going to play it here, but I'm sure you probably saw it, in which Dawn Kirby appeared tearfully saying that she had nothing to do with this, didn't know who this woman was, had never seen her, lived somewhere else, and that, in fact, she... did not live in that building. And there is also, let me see. There was a bunch of people that went on your Facebook page that contacted you to tell you to remove the post, besides the police, right?
Yes.
Who else told you that you needed to remove the post?
Jay Thomas did.
Jay Thomas. We'll show you that in a minute here. But who else? People in her family, right? In
her alleged sister, or somebody to claim being her sister, and a native male with some weird kind of name,
Rome Took Senior,
and yeah, he claims on a different post to be her live-in boyfriend.
Okay, so let's start by showing people Lissa's Facebook post about the police wake-up call that we just shared with you, which is number 5. She says, Fargo PD, the Facebook police, just woke me up and demanded that I remove that post about Dawn Kirby because it's okay for her to live by a school and be around children. They said she was a low-level offender and didn't even have to register, right?
That she didn't have to notify.
Right. Without notifying those that she's on the registry. 3 to 4 officers. And they could be using that time and energy to find Savannah. Mixed up priorities. I'm not going to share all the comments that were posted underneath that, but there were a lot of people that were very upset that the police were out at your home harassing you about this post. And then there are some posts that were 7. Number 7, you'll see Lissa's reflection after the cops came, said, after thinking about Fargo PD showing up at my door in the middle of the night, I find it super interesting that their response time to a post I wrote is better than their response to a missing pregnant mother. During the conversation, not once did they acknowledge Savannah and her missing status. They did say, however, that they and the person I identified was worried about losing a job. Doesn't this person have to notify their employer of past misdeeds anyway? And what about the family who is more worried about losing a daughter and a granddaughter? And there were some comments on that post. 7A here shows one of the people saying, I'm curious to know what or who at Dawn's register, what or who, who's at Dawn's registered address? And why is she getting away with living here instead of her address in the first place? So this is coming from a person that lives in that building, living here, she's saying.
Mm-hmm.
And then you said exactly. And then somebody else says, she's saying on the radio right now, she lives miles away from her apartment. Next one. 7B. This is a post that you made, and you added more context to what happened to you. And you said, oh, yeah, and the one officer threatened to charge me with criminal defamation. I'd like to see that in the code books. I'm sure if it exists, it is a civil matter. I never heard of that either. Criminal defamation. I'm like, that's a new one. C, 7C, this is a post by a person that lives in the building. She says, I live below William Hohen and Don Kirby. Maybe the people who are trying to say they know her and where she lives are mistaken by another Don Kirby. If the police confirm Don Kirby, in fact, lives here, then that's that, I'm sure. But something does seem a little off there as well. This whole thing makes me sick. And then they go on to comment under that. Don's sister replied on here somewhere. Oh, no, this is another person. Don's sister replied on here somewhere that saying that Dawn lived downstairs. I'm so confused. If she lived downstairs, how can anyone live below her? And this woman replies, below me is a couple with a baby, which is across the hall from Savannah's family. So I don't know what that lady is talking about unless she's talking about the address that Dawn is supposed to be at, her registered address. Okay. So there was a lot of confusion about whether or not Dawn lived at this address. And there was a lot of back and forth between a lot of people. Let's look at the Tukes, number 8, this guy who sent you messages. He said, you made a post about Dawn Kirby on your wall and shared it, and it's not even true. I live with Dawn, and this girl doesn't live in our building or even close to us. Please remove this post. We don't know her, and have had nothing to do with this. Maybe you should cross-check this missing chick's address with ours before you go around saying things that ain't true. And then he goes on to say, that's how far apart they live, dumbass. He was pretty upset. Yeah. Here's the next one. This is from him, and he says, she lived in the same address for over 7 years. The police do checks on her every now and then. She's my girlfriend and we live together. I've known her for over 10 years. And then he goes on to say, the school knows her situation because our kids go to school there. Okay. So, let's show them Jay Thomas's post. Don Kirby does not live above Savannah and does not even live in the building or even close to the building. Your post needs to come down. And here is a post that Lissa made saying she was not intimidated. This was done on August 23rd at around 11. I will say this once again. I am in no way afraid or intimidated by criticism as long as we get our missing back. If I have wronged anyone by doing so, I will apologize. But I see nothing of that nature in the foreseeable future. All right. So, there has been a lot that has happened in the last 8, 10, 12 hours. Things have moved very precipitously. There was a lot of news stories that happened incidentally right after your post, right after you talked about it and started asking questions on behalf of the family there was a lot of movement on the police's side, some of it to harass you and to tell you to stop doing what you were doing. But there was also a lot of activity to try to figure out where she was. Some things that kind of seemed disturbing to me was that it wasn't until August 23rd, I believe, that they said they were treating it as a criminal investigation finally.
Right.
So initially they were saying there's no evidence to suggest foul play.
Yes, and before they had made comments that there's no crime here.
Right. So that, I mean, to the family,
yeah,
that feels like this is not going anywhere. This is not going to help us find our daughter. The next time that we hear a change in the shift in the way the police are talking about it isn't until August 23rd when they say that they're treating it as a criminal investigation. And then finally, they tell us today that they have found a newborn baby in that house that was taken out to the to an ambulance. So I wanted to also share with you that, and I could be wrong about this, I had seen a post or had heard somewhere that the family had requested that the FBI get involved, or that the police had stated in some way that they were going to contact the FBI. I could be wrong about that, but I found it interesting to note that on a post of August 24th, if you can show a number 11, somebody that was going to the sweat that was done, the gathering that was done for Savannah, said, "Just got done at a prayer gathering for my niece, Savannah LaFontaine. She's 8 months pregnant and missing since Saturday here in Fargo. Please keep her and her parents and siblings in prayer. Tomorrow, they will gather at the Fargo police station downtown to ask them to please get the FBI involved. I don't know why they ain't trying to be involved already. Please bring Savannah and baby home safely to her family in Jesus' name." Now, is that something common that don't they just automatically involve the FBI when somebody is missing?
No. No, that doesn't happen unless you go across state lines or if a child is abducted.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that would be an interesting thing to kind of look into, because NCMEC, or the National Center for Exploited Missing Children, maybe should take a look at that if the person is pregnant.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because
these kinds of things,
I don't even know what to say.
I know these kinds of things where the police have already said that the baby is, they haven't done the DNA test with the dad. They're checking that now, but it appears that the baby is hers. If that is the case, then either that baby was born prematurely or it was taken out of her body. And that's not, unfortunately, that's not something that we've never heard happen before.
Right.
To pregnant women. So I think that is a very interesting suggestion that you made, that maybe they should be looking at that, especially with women that are in that kind of late term, ready to have their children. They're very vulnerable, not to mention the fact that Indigenous women are the most abducted and killed and trafficked in this country. And well, not just in this country, in this continent.
Well, right after she had gone missing, I had put some statistics out there because I just like to be real with the families about, you know, I'm kind of statistical at times, just to let them know that the largest death rate for women is that are pregnant is homicide.
Mm-hmm.
And that I think it's about almost 50% relates to the father not being able or ready to be a father, or maybe somebody affiliated with the father.
Mm-hmm.
So this kind of an abduction is kind of rare. But when, you know, like when they made the laws for domestic violence, and for law enforcement, they had cue words. If the woman says, and back then, it was one-sided, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
If the woman says that she's afraid, then the guy's going in. You know, if the, or, you know, if she feels threatened or she's afraid or whatever, those were cue words. That's when they knew to take the other person and put them in jail.
Mm-hmm.
For the safety of the woman.
Right.
And since then, a lot of things have changed. A lot of times it'll take both parties, mm-hmm. you know, because of the equal treatment.
Mm-hmm.
We get equal treatment on some things, but not everything. and so, but there should be cue things, cue terms, or kind of insightfulness that they'll recognize when a family says, this is totally unlike this person. This is 100% out of character. When the family is literally in hysterics, mm-hmm. and they say, look, she could barely make it to work. Her ankles were so swollen from her pregnancy, you know, like had edema, that she, you know, the woman offered her $20. She thought it was going to be a quick $20, you know. And Lord knows what that $20 will cost us. You know what I mean? As a group of people concerned about her, you know, I'm sure everybody would, you know, if we could play those moments back.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, when are you ever suspicious of an acquaintance? You know, especially when it's so broad daylight in your building, it's a neighbor. How far can they go? You know what I mean? And then all of a sudden this, you know, this young lady doesn't reappear. And she had ordered a pizza before she even walked out the door.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then had some other responsibilities, take her younger brother to work, you know, and all these time stamps. And she's normally a very reliable, very responsible person. And so she doesn't show up for the pizza she paid for.
Mm-hmm.
And then she doesn't show up to take her brother to work. I mean, and
she left without her
Car keys, without her wallet. I mean,
that's weird.
And I believe one of the excuses the PD used was maybe she walked to the store. Well, with what for cash when her everything is right here?
There. Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. Well, they have since arrested. They originally arrested William Hohen on a unpaid fine and released him. I believe both he and Cruz have been arrested again and taken in for questioning.
Mm-hmm.
Now this is the, if you could toss up the story, the update, the police update from today. This was posted up very recently. This is William Hohen, and then below is a mugshot of this Cruz woman. If you could scroll down a little bit further, I can get all of the information. It's all the way at the bottom. I don't want to read the whole story.
Brooke,
that's right. Brooke Cruz. But they apprehended both of these people, and here they talk about, you know, what they've involved here. They've said that they've had 35 detectives, 4 sergeants, 2 lieutenants, and a deputy working in many cases around the clock on this investigation. And we have also received assistance from local, state, and federal agencies. We've used canines, watercraft, and several aircraft in this investigation. So Brooke Cruz was home during the execution of a search warrant. Newborn infant was also present in the apartment. The infant was alive and was immediately taken to a medical facility. Our investigation thus far indicates the probability that this is Savannah Graywin's child. William Hohen and Brooke Cruz were detained and brought to the police department for interviews by detectives working on this case. As further information was developed and evidence obtained, William Henry Hohen and Brooke Lynn Cruz were both arrested and charged with Class A felony conspiracy to commit kidnapping. Now let's show a side-by-side of Cruz and the woman Dawn Kirby. They do look remarkably alike. I can see why a lot of people were confused. I can see the resemblance, especially in their noses and their mouths. And they both have brown hair. So I think that it's very likely misidentified person. But the people that lived there, and including the family members, thought that it was her.
They did.
And it looks like her. So I can understand why that would happen. I can also understand why, when you're going to a police department and they're not being responsive to you, and it feels like they're telling you not only that they're not doing very much and they don't want to, or that there's nothing that needs to be done because there's no crime here.
Or that you're inconveniencing them.
Yeah, that you're actually doing something that's kind of a pain for them. That you would feel compelled to search on your own and do whatever was necessary to find your loved one. I know I would, especially if I didn't feel like I was getting any help from the local authorities. And that is a sentiment that many people have felt in this community, especially in Fargo, and especially people of color. I mean, that is something that we've had to deal with. One of the first cases I worked when I came to live in Fargo was the case of a Vietnamese man who had to go to the police station 22 times to try to report a crime against a white business owner because they wouldn't let him file his report. So you can understand the frustration of this family and the desperation with which they wanted to try and find Savannah. I wanted you to talk about today what people are going to navigate. What's it going to really be like? Because I think that people have in mind what they see in the movies. Like, if I call the police when my missing loved one disappears, this is what's going to happen. They're going to call the FBI. They're going to immediately send out an Amber Alert. There's going to be all of the squad cars are going to be going up. They're going to collect DNA right away. They're going to send out the
CSI crime lab.
Yes, all of that.
Helicopters.
Yes.
Dapplecopters. Okay. Know, whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
How much of that is correct?
None of it.
Zero of the things I said are. So what really happens? Tell us how it really goes.
Well, if you're lucky, you'll actually get an officer to take a report. And if you're even luckier, you'll be able to get that officer to enter that information into the computer. And that's two times luck. So you know what I'm saying? So
how do you prevent that?
What you do is they like, what you should do is pull up the policy for in the Century Code for missing persons. Oh. And at the bottom of the Century Code, it says for North Dakota now. Minnesota has its version. North Dakota has theirs. North Dakota's is very bare bones. Mm-hmm. However, it is at the bottom of the Century Code that they say that we are to develop an actual policy.
Okay.
And from what I can tell, I'm not sure that that's ever happened. Because missing persons usually goes to the back burner and, you know, people run out of funding, people run out of time, and this doesn't happen very often here, but it really does.
It says right here in the Century Code, as you say, that the Attorney General to develop missing persons procedural policy. And this is North Dakota Century Code, section 12-68-05. to provide guidance to law enforcement agencies in the state, the Attorney General shall develop a procedures manual consistent with this chapter relating to the investigation of missing persons cases. The Attorney General shall distribute the manual to law enforcement agencies. But to your knowledge, that has not occurred.
I don't believe so.
So why is that important? Why is it important to have a policy that exists? What would you think that policy would look like? I'm just trying to imagine, like, well, what would it say?
If you read the top portion of that very same...
North Dakota Century Code?
Yeah. It tells you, okay, because before the Bakken oil fields really flared up like they are now, mm-hmm. There were people from out of state who had missing persons here in North Dakota, and North Dakota was oftentimes telling them, "Is you're calling from out of state, we don't have to take this call." Yeah.
Oh, God.
With the case with Casey Clark, when
don't
he
get
went
lost
missing,
in North Dakota people.
North Dakota never did file a missing persons report.
What?
The missing persons report came out of Texas.
What?
Yes. North Dakota never even prosecuted for his murder. They prosecuted out of Washington.
What?
Yes. So if you ever want to see the really dark side of the law when it comes to missing persons, look up the Casey Clark case.
And that's somebody that you've been looking for 5 years.
Going on six. Casey's mother lived out of state. So,
but he was an oil worker.
Yes.
He was living in North Dakota.
Yes. And, nobody ever filed the missing persons report, even though he had been reported repeatedly by friends and coworkers, roommates, mother, you know, nobody, not one ever report ever came out of North Dakota. The actual report came from his previous landlord at his old residence in Texas because he failed to pay the rent. And with what was going on through the telephone, you know, with the different calling and whatnot, that's how they figured out that he indeed was missing, because he would never abandon his dog or his property that was in Texas. So the landlord filed the missing persons out of Texas, and then they passed it along to North Dakota.
But that is terrifying.
Yeah.
I mean, that means that if you get lost, the likelihood that there's even a policy, a procedure in place to help law enforcement find you doesn't even exist. And that the hoops that people have to jump through and the... Well, you have to advocate for yourself. Yes. The advocacy that you need to, the awareness that you need to have in order to hold the police accountable in their investigative process is almost impossible for any one human to know all those things. I mean, for them to just already know that. It doesn't usually happen that you need to know all that stuff until someone is missing.
Right, right. And one of the other things about that is I've actually had law enforcement themselves, when I try to advocate for families on their behalf, and they would tell me, well, there's a 48-hour or a 72-hour waiting period.
Waiting?
And I'm like, no, there's not. And I'd have to print this and send it to them or email it to them or whatever and say, there is no waiting period. You need to get on this right away. And then they're like,
oh, wow.
Why do
they say that?
That's a Hollywood term.
What?
When I went to the National Missing Persons Conference in Atlanta, Georgia last year, I had asked, and other people were wondering, like, across the United States, even law enforcement falsely believes there's always this waiting period. Where does this come from? And most of the leaders at the conference said, that's Hollywood. Hollywood says that. And because everybody watches TV, even law enforcement believes.
Hollywood. Hollywood.
You know, when everybody knows in their right mind that as the time clock is ticking, your chances of recovery or maintaining the integrity of any evidence is you're losing that with every passing moment. So to wait for 72 hours,
ridiculous.
Especially for a child is on a stranger abduction is usually not even alive within 4 hours. So if you're going to wait 72 hours, you know what I mean?
But it's almost ensures that you're not going to find anything.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's terrifying. That is horrifying. So if you have to file a police report, how do you make sure that, one, the police officer takes your report and that you have proof that you made a report?
You get the ICR or the NCIC report
ICR,
number.
NCIC report number. ICR or NCIC report
Don't
number.
Don't leave that station or do not hang up the phone until you have those numbers.
Okay.
Once you have those numbers, you can reach out to other people for social media referrals and different things like that.
Mm-hmm.
People are more comfortable with helping you as long as you have that number, and then they can call the station and verify, because there are times where domestic abuse cases where somebody will report their significant other missing when they're actually trying to locate them to reoffend against them. So you have to be careful about things like that. When it comes to Savannah's family, they reported this right away.
Right.
Where most people, you know, they hesitate. They second guess themselves.
Sure.
And it doesn't help when law enforcement's gaslighting you and making you feel that you're being paranoid or you're out of line. And so to keep going, you need to get that ICR or NCIC number. And then you need to start reaching out. And don't be afraid of making mistakes. I made a mistake.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I went off witness verification of an ID of somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and an apology, I'll get to that. You know, I'd like to make that in person if I could, but who knows?
Sure.
However, when you reach out and you get the common knowledge that, hey, this person is missing, we've done flyers, we've done social media, we've done sidewalk chalk, window paints, we've done a lot of things, including the social media.
Mm-hmm.
And so all these different things help to get the word out. Like, we have these digital billboards in town. We should have some kind of an account or an agreement with the people so that when something like this happens, because you want everybody, you want all eyes and ears. Every person in this community is a set of eyes and ears, you know, and then it would be nice for whoever the person representing that case from law enforcement could develop a good trusting rapport with the family and keep them updated. And that's why I say relationship.
Yeah.
Because most often law enforcement wants to protect the integrity of the case, which is totally understandable.
Sure.
However, when you leave the family in the total darkness, they're going to start trying things themselves.
People freak out.
And that's
normal.
That's normal.
It's natural.
And so if they have a good relationship with these people, and it's a good relationship, then people can be respectful of, you know, the different things that people can bring to the table. Now, like, there's been families that want to go out and conduct searches themselves in maybe an area that maybe even law enforcement said it could be in this area. And usually I'll try to get them to say, you know, hey, don't do that. How much do you love this family member? Because if this person is no longer with us, how badly would you want the person responsible held accountable for this? Because you could be jeopardizing
that
case.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to have somebody there to stabilize the family emotions and try to keep some clarity there, mm-hmm. and keep things moving and keeping them informed, but letting law enforcement do their job. Now, when I come into the picture, a lot of times law enforcement, because the one thing the guy said to me when I opened the door is, aren't you some missing person advocate? And that's when I was like, wait, hold on. What has that got to do with anything? I didn't post this on any site. I posted this on my personal page. Mm-hmm. And that's when I decided to go get the recorder.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, that kind of shystiness right there. They shouldn't see me as a threat. They should kind of see me as a buffer, because I'm not there to try and take over their case. But I do know, like, third parties, a lot of them who don't want to be involved with law enforcement directly, feel more comfortable telling a neutral third party some of the information.
Yeah.
That's probably why I ended up knowing a little bit more about what was going on in that apartment building than they did.
Mm-hmm.
Like he said, mm-hmm. in the recording, like, well, I want.
And let's just say it. The cops have not done a very good job of building trusting relationships, especially with Native American populations, especially within the last year.
Oh, no.
They've had a lot of infractions. Weren't they going to get a special training?
They were supposed to get a special training. As a matter of fact, the news even showed up at the Sweat Lodge last night. I mean, how would they like it if I ran into whatever goes on in the Christian way and just started snapping photos and, you know, brought my whole entourage? You know, it's like, this is really inappropriate. But thank goodness I wasn't there, because it probably would have said something uncomfortable for everybody else. But
did they have another issue? Did the cops have another issue pulling people out of a neepee, out of sweat?
They did.
They just do not have that respect ceremony, do they?
They don't. But anyway, back to Savannah. I'm sorry, I got off point there, but...
Well, I think it's part and parcel of it. If you can't, well, if you don't have a trusting relationship with the cops, how are you going to feel comfortable talking to them?
Well, especially when they, on the initial approach, they demean you. They make you feel less than. They make you feel like what you're doing is inappropriate by worrying about your loved one. And so, you know, the parents were going stir crazy in their place. They want to find their daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, they're being told that you cannot go up and question this person anymore. You know, when they made the arrest that night of William
Owen,
on his way back from, mm-hmm. he had parked his truck away from the building, and him and this female were walking back. She actually had the laundry basket in her hands when he was arrested.
Wow.
What are the chances that the baby was right there and the cops were right there and did nothing to investigate that?
Holy,
like, are you sure that's just a bag, you know, a pile of dirty clothes? Let me check. I mean, what if there was a weapon in there, right? I mean, if...
They didn't even search them.
They must have never.
Wow.
Because, yeah, I had heard that she was taking the baby... transporting the baby in a bag and in a basket.
And in a laundry basket specifically.
Yeah, and she had a laundry basket.
Or a sack or something like that, they said.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's just really crazy. But
and what did you never told everybody your theory about the box. Because remember you mentioned William Hone was walking around at night with the box?
Yeah, so after we heard that, well, it was Saturday and Sunday when, you know, the family kept calling the cops. And so Saturday night or early Sunday, he was seen by his neighbors with a flashlight out in the back, and he brought in a small box. And I wouldn't be surprised if maybe they took the baby out and put it out in the grass for a while because they were afraid that the police were coming back. But I do know that he was out crawling around in the grass on the other side of the fence and retrieved this box and brought it back in.
That is
so, I mean, with so the late weird. With the late night and the cold, yeah. If the baby was in there, what could have happened?
Oh, my God. This story is so terrifying, you know, because what it does is it brings home the reality about what can happen in a disaster. How are people going to handle it? We'd like to think that in the worst moments, we're going to rise to the challenge and our police are going to rise to the challenge. But sadly, we also have to admit where there are failings, because people's lives are literally on the line.
Yes.
And we need to know what people can do to make sure that their loved ones are sought out and found. Now, you told me that you need to file that report. You need to get a report number. You also mentioned that it would be a good idea to record. Now, I love that suggestion because I always tell people to record everything. You have to have something to prove that you filed your police report. Mm-hmm. You know how often people get turned away and told, we're not going to file your police report? Or that they get told, we're going to file your, you go in, you file your police report, you think you told the cops everything. They look like they're taking down notes, but they didn't file a report at all. Mm-hmm. So you should record it so you can prove that you actually filed a police report. In fact, in Kathleen Bennett's case, Kathleen Bennett and Russell went with their cousin Sonny Richards to Morton County to file reports. All three of them filled out the paperwork, and they said they never had any paperwork. So if you don't have any way of proving that you filed your report, they may say it never happened and that doesn't exist.
Well, and one of the things when it comes to report filing, when it comes to some law enforcement, failures to file those reports, they should be held accountable legally, I think. There was a young lady out of Hillsboro who was mentally ill, and she had some kind of a flare-up, and her parents reported her missing, and the officer didn't take the call. Or he did take the call. He never filed a report. The next day, I think it was, or maybe even later that evening, she was found on an exit ramp out in the field, like, you know, and face down, laying in the snow, practically dying of hypothermia. She was a minor child, and a passersby saw her, and they rescued her. This girl could have died. And that officer subsequently was fired for that. But there should be, is firing somebody and moving them to a new location actually any kind of a good response for keeping anybody from doing that again?
It seems to me like if there's any signs that this is a problem that repeats itself, there has to be a hard and fast policy that if someone is reported missing, there's a protocol and you have to follow it. Because it just terrifies me to think that some cops are just like, nope, not going to do a report.
Right.
What else do you have to do? You told me that you need to become knowledgeable about missing persons guidelines to the police.
Right. And that's what's above this, the page and a half above this last portion of the Century Code. And it tells you that if you're an out-of-state person, you can file a missing persons report for somebody in North Dakota.
Oh, wow.
And you do not have to make it in person, because there's actually been people in rural areas that says, I would like to report my loved one missing. And they'll say, well, you can come in and do that. Therefore, they don't have to make a report because the people don't have transportation or something.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Or an elder who isn't able to drive anymore. And, you know, they're living son or daughter.
Or a person with a disability.
Yeah.
You're listening to 88.1 FM KPPPLP Fargo Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves.
So they took that and kind of dealt with that. There's no waiting period, and you know, they put some real bare bones things
so
in this.
Three guideline. Things that you said that are really important is you can file a report regardless of whether or not you're in state or out of state.
And you can file it in any area in this state. Just because I live in Cass County does not mean that I cannot call Barnes County
and file a report.
Right.
And you can be from out of state.
You can be from out of state.
And there's no waiting period.
There's no waiting period.
What was the other thing? There's no waiting period. You can file if you're from out of state. And
get the officer's number. Or, you know, the badge number or the person's name that takes the report just in case something's amiss.
And the latest thing that you just told me, the one that you just told me right now, is that if somebody calls in to file a report, they don't have to do it in person.
Right.
If they tell you you have to come in person, tell them, no, that's not true. The Century Code does not require me to come in person.
Right. And people need to get to know the Century Code. Mm-hmm. Another thing they need to do is they need to call the Attorney General's office and ask where the guidelines are, because that should be available to the public as well. If everybody works together,
mm-hmm.
and not, you know, like, oh, we got our secrets over here and you guys have yours over there, whatever. The main thing is that we need to get these people located. Romo.
Right.
From the taco shop.
Yeah.
His family has been told that he's fine as well. Mm-hmm. Well, without making any visual contact, they have had no communication physically, you know, in person or by any other means.
Mm-hmm.
But yet they're telling his family and his friends he's fine. So where is he?
And he is because a Mexican man that owns some businesses here in town.
Yes. And nobody knows where he's at. So these things get brushed under the rug. Family doesn't know where he's at.
And he's been missing for a long time
now. And the friends here now who initially made the report are being told that we're not going to talk to you. We're only going to talk to the family. When they already previously said that there was a language barrier with the family. So that just kind of takes the responsibility of looking for Romo right off the table.
Right.
And then I got another missing a young girl report. She's 13 years old. She's been missing since July 23rd. Haven't seen one report. Haven't seen any media on this little girl. The grandmother even gave me an address to look that she had, you know, suspected that this little girl may be at. Which
and
is
she
right
filed a report?
Yes.
Which is right by where?
By the dog park.
Okay.
And so nothing's been done. Didn't even know she was missing myself, but the grandma contacted me. But she's considered a runaway. And that's another thing. When people are considered runaways, it's like law enforcement disregards them. There has to be a reason why they ran away.
And do they tend to consider younger people runaways automatically, even if the parents
it
don't
seems
believe
so.
You?
It seems so.
Now, you told me something special goes along with how soon they have to enter someone in as missing. You said it should be entered into the system within 4 hours of a missing person.
For a child?
For a child, that's right.
I believe it's 4 hours that I'd have to look. I haven't done too many kid missing person cases lately.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, really. And this last case right here has been like between working and trying to support the family with whatever I can. It's kind of been put, you know, this other little girl on the back burner for now. Not to say I would forget her.
Right.
But, you know, we have Damon Boyd. I've been working on that case, and last month actually became his guardian, and I've never even met him. Became his legal guardian because the tribe thought that it would be in his best interest that I would have full capacity to get whatever records I needed in order to try and locate him or his remains. So, I mean, this whole business has taken, you know, it takes all of my time when I'm not at work. Sometimes I even resent going to work because there's just so much to do out here.
I know.
But, yeah.
You take this very serious, though. This is no joke to you. And you've been working with families in crisis like this for a long time. So I think that there's an understanding that you have with the business of looking for people.
Yeah. Lately I've been, I still assist people even out of state remotely, just like by giving them suggestions and guidance and things like that. And that's actually been kind of working out pretty good. So I'm going to try and do that. Mm-hmm. I haven't been like all up in Savannah's case because mm-hmm. my job, I got to be there.
Yeah. Got to pay the bills.
Yeah. So, but we've been in contact and I try to give them as much support and suggestions and anything like that that I can, you know, and then just doing what I can do from here, making, you know, printing up the posters or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, I do want to say one thing about the whole case with Savannah.
Sure.
Her sister, her little sister, I don't even think she's of majority age, so I'm not going to say her name. Mm-hmm. But if it weren't for her little sister, I mean, this girl has been running nonstop, getting the word out, taking news interviews, and just, I mean, you would think that she was 30 years old. She's got it together, you know, and she's awesome. She's been trying to support her mom emotionally. You could about imagine what the parents are going through. And this young lady, and she knows who she is. She's a warrior. And I just want to commend her for her undying, untiring efforts to find her sister and her niece, you know. And it sounds like the niece is back, you know, will be back with family soon. If everybody responded to missing persons or their loved ones like this young lady has done, and she's relentless, and I really like that about her.
I wonder why.
And I just, I know that if, you know, when we get Savannah home, no matter what the circumstances, I know that her sister would be so proud of her, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to make a point to say that.
That's really important. And our thoughts and our prayers and our love go out to the family. And when you find out how the family wishes for our audience to support them, will you let us know?
I will.
What kind of support they would like. Finally, I wanted to ask you to tell me about... how they, because, you know, they did have a truck out there doing forensics today. Everybody's been cleared out of that building and they can't return. They're police there all day, lots and lots of them. So I'm assuming they're collecting DNA. They said they were collecting DNA on the father to test the baby. But when people go missing for a longer period of time, the police are supposed to collect DNA from the family.
Yes.
Why is that important? What is the policy on that? And how do people make sure that that gets done?
I'm not sure the policy, right? It should say it on that.
Sentry code?
Yeah. I believe it's 30 days. After 30 days, it's considered like a longer term case.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the duty of law enforcement to get out there and get DNA from any surviving family members in case this person may have crossed state lines and might be listed as an unidentified in another area.
Mm-hmm.
And we suspected that with like the case of Ron Johnson, who is an older male, and that maybe he may have had some kind of dementia. His 14-foot Cadillac is missing too. So we thought maybe if he made it across state lines that he might be listed as a unidentified living person or even an unidentified deceased person.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll never know because the last time I had talked to his daughters that no DNA had ever been requested.
Wow.
And it's been almost October will be 7 years.
Wow. Jeez. And it's just because they failed to collect a piece of evidence.
Yeah, a drive and a swab.
Wow. So how can people make sure that piece gets done?
You could go to your law enforcement agency mm-hmm. and ask them.
How long do you wait before you take DNA samples? Is that the question that we would ask?
No, you say I'm here to submit a DNA sample for my missing loved one.
Okay.
In case this person is recovered elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Minnesota has so many unidentifieds. I don't know if you had seen anything on my post. I know you're busy too, but they had a DNA
database
day in different locales around Minnesota to collect DNA so that they could try and identify their vast amount of unidentified remains in their little system. So they had some smaller towns, and then they did a stop in Bemidji. And, you know, just if you have a missing family member, come over here and we'll take your DNA to try and get some of these people identified. So North Dakota hasn't done that, and our list is getting longer and longer. Our state does not too well of a job of keeping that the missing database updated. So, it's kind of hard to rely on somebody for anything like that when they're so, you know, blasé about, they're just not taking it seriously sometimes. And I think the Attorney General is the one who's responsible for that website. I know they're working on updating it now, so hopefully they'll get their records straight. But we have a lot of people that are North Dakota residents that are actually missing outside of state too. And people, they're not listed as missing because even if though they're from here, they went missing in a different state. So we don't count those.
Oh my God.
You know what I mean? If you want to find that person, you'll have to know that they're missing. Go to that state's registry and look them up there. I can't remember the optometrist out of Bismarck who went to Montana and his rig and his trailer, he was taking pictures out there. Never found him. Recovered his vehicle and the trailer. And you ask anybody, I can't even think of his name right now, but you ask anybody, hey, what about Dr. So-and-so? Oh, you mean they didn't find him? No, they didn't find him. Well, I figured they would have because we never heard anything about it again. So when it's a hot story, the news will cover it and then it's over. Unless you have someone out here making waves, making trouble, misidentifying people, whatever.
Pushing buttons and pushing forward on an investigation because you know that the loved ones need that support. The loved ones are the ones that are desperate. Is there anything else that you want to mention about Savannah's case in particular or to help people in case they have a missing one?
Well, I do believe, I can't remember the name of the page off the top of my head, but Savannah has her own Facebook page, like Help Find Savannah or something like that. It comes up automatically on my
on your page?
Facebook. So if you want to keep up to date, you can go to that page. I would assume... I think they might even be having a fundraiser. You could about imagine what the parents are going through with school starting and stuff, and everybody's totally 100% focused on finding Savannah. So they're having some financials and whatnot, and I think there might be like a You Caring or something on their site there. So, you know, if we have any searches, it would probably be posted on that site.
Okay.
And so if you want to just give well wishes or even prayers, I mean, the family has been asking for lots of prayers. So, and we believe in that. So anything of that sort, the family welcomes all that.
Let's see if we can find the page for her. We will post that along with this program so that people can go to that Facebook page and look for updates. We'll find it.
We're
all
going to get on our phones now.
Yeah. Well, thank you for talking about this really difficult subject. There's a lot to unpack. There's a lot we don't know about this. And I'm always hounding you to come back to the show and tell us more, educate us, because there's so much we don't know. And this is the reason why I think it's so important for you to come back. So I really appreciate you being with us tonight, and I hope you can come back again soon.
And I would, as just the last thing, I would like to make a public apology for the mistaken identity.
Sure.
Kirby, Don Kirby, for sharing the information that was provided to us regarding who she was. And I am sure she's come a long way from who she was. And I know that this will not, you know, she seems like a pretty resilient person. And that's all I can say. I'm not going to identify all the people that who thought it was her. Mm-hmm. I did share the information. I take full responsibility for that. And it was misinformation. So, yeah, there we go.
Yeah. Well, that was really great. Thank you for sharing that with us. We hope that all of the parties involved are able to move forward and also help in finding this young lady's whereabouts. We are still searching for Savannah LaFontaine Graywind. Thank you for being here on A Mexican Crossing Lines with Cindy Gomez-Shemp.
And Duke Gomez-Shemp.
On 88.1 FM KPPPLP Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. Thanks for watching. Good night.